They're on the fourth line on the page.
Fourth line from the top.
Right. Last thing that we were talking about happened to be about comparison of Torah to water, remember, to milk, to wine, okay? And we gave different reasons why. I mean, there's, for example, the idea of modesty, that Torah remains best in someone who is modest, just as water, for example, runs down. Or we also learned that the very last thing that we had on the top of the... And then, of course, we had that famous story about Rabbi Yeshua and the daughter of the emperor,
yes.
Remember? And she said...
How come you said that?
How come you're so ugly, right?
Yeah.
So he said, what do you keep your vessels... what do you keep your wine in? So she said, earthenware, like everybody else. And he said, no, important people, you got to keep it... And jokes, right? Gold and silver. So they did it, and lo and behold, the wine became sour. And so when they came, they said to Rabbi Yeshua, why did you give us such advice? So he said, well, it goes to show you. Just as wine is kept best in ordinary earthenware jugs, so likewise Torah is best preserved also in someone who is not so handsome. So then the Gemara asked the question, but there are scholars who also happen to be handsome. So his answer was, if you remember, he said, well, if they were uglier, they weren't as handsome, they would have known better. They would have
known more Torah.
They would have known more Torah. They would have been more learned in Torah. So on. And then the last thing that we had, that was the end of the first line over there. And then it says, and another explanation as to why the Torah was compared to these liquids, to wine, to water, and to milk. So he says, just as these three different liquids do not become possible, they don't become spoiled except through inattention.
Mm-hmm.
So the words of Torah too, you start in to neglect them, you don't pay attention to them, so this is when they turn sour as well. So we had a very excellent lesson why we should pay attention to what we're doing.
Shame on you.
Again. Okay, so now we continue with where we left off last week. Omer Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanino. So Rabbi Chama, the son of Rabbi Chanina, said, "Godol yom hakshomim ki yom shenivru shamayim v'aretz." He says that the day when rain comes is as great as the day upon which the sky and the earth, the heavens and the earth, were created. Shenemar, and he brings as his proof pasuk a quotation from Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu says, "Harifu shamayim imal," which means, pour rain, O heavens, from up above, Ushachakim Yizl Tzedek, and let the clouds, let the skies, is a better translation, let the skies drip with righteousness, Tiftach Eretz, let the earth open, the Yifru Yesha, and let salvation literally, become fruitful, right? Utzdokot Hatzmiach Yachad, and let it also bring about, righteousness and so on. And then the end of that pasuk is Ani Hashem Berosiv, I am the Lord who created it. So they immediately say Berosim Leinemar El Berosiv, which means, if we take a look at this verse, we see that the last word in the pasuk does not say Berosim, I have created them, which would mean, Shemayim, Oretz, and everything else, but I created it. And what is the if, therefore, that we're referring to? The answer is the rain, as referred to right at the very beginning of the pasuk, where it says, "Harifu shamayim imal," pour down rain, O heavens, from up above. Of course, Yeshayahu over there is talking about the salvation of God, his saving power, which will drip literally from the heavens and, make fruitful the earth through the righteousness of the people, who dwell upon it. And therefore, this is how God's salvation will be manifest. But from this point on, practically everything on this page has to be understood, that all the psukim that they touch, very few of them they really touch according to pshat, according to the simple meaning of what the verses are.
Translation.
Right. literal meaning of what they are, that you have to go back to the original. You know, you take a Tanakh with a good translation, and you see what it is in its own context. But remember that these were Rabbonim, they were Chachamim. They understood Pshat, but at the same time, they liked to give a drash in order to interpret the verse and to bring out a very important lesson for us. So that the important lesson over here that he is bringing out is the importance of rain as an act of creation on a par, if you wish, with the creation of heaven and earth. And this is how great is this great benefit that we enjoy when the Rabbeinu Shalom sends rain to us. It's based upon the first part where it says Harifu Shamayim. Okay? And then the fact that you have Shemayim and Eretz mentioned in the same verse, you see? You see that? So this is the reason why he says that the rain, right, is it's on a par with the creation of Shemayim and Eretz. That's how he draws the inference from it, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Omer Rabbi Shaya. Now, Rabbi Shai also wants to talk about how great is rain. So he says, "Gadol yirat shomim." He says, "Great is, you know, the day when rain falls." Shafila Yeshua poravarovabel, because Yeshua also, in other words, God's salvation becomes even more fruitful and multiplies on it. Shenema, he brings the same pasuk, "Tiftach eretz," right? Let the earth open up. The yifru yeshan, let salvation, you know, become fruitful. Okay. Omer Rabbi Tanchum Mar Chanilai, Ein Hakshomim Yodim Elim Kem Nimchalav Benisehim Shal Yisrael. He says that the rain will fall only when the sins of the people of Israel are forgiven. Shenema, and here he brings a pasuk from Tehillim. Tehillim it says, Rotzisa Hashem Atzecho, you, O Lord, have shown favor to your land. Shafto, the word is not Shabbos. You have to know the pasuk and tell him.
It's the way it's not Shabbos.
You're right, sure, it could be Shabbos also, but it isn't. Okay. That's why you really have to have an idea, you know, of what the Tanakh has to say. What does the Torah say?
So he says,
you, O Lord, have shown favor to your land. We'll stop for a moment and give David a chance to. And the fact that the sins of the people of Israel have been forgiven.
Zionomid based.
All right. Shenema, as the pasuk says, as I said, Rotzisa Hashem Artzecho, you, O Lord, have shown favor unto your land. Shavto Shavus Yaakov, you have caused the captivity of Yaakov, you know, to come to an end, that the people of Israel will return to your land, right? Nososa Avon Amecho, you have forgiven the sin of your people, you know, Nosa Yovon, this is the idea, so Nososa Avon Amecho, you have forgiven the sin of your people, and kisisal kol chatasam sela, and you have covered up. In other words, it's another way of saying, you know, forgiven all their
sins.
Their sinning, sela.
What does the word sela mean?
Good question. What does sela mean?
Yeah, sort of an affirmative, right?
Well, there are two basic ideas. The traditional translation of Sela is forever, and that's why we say V'chol Achayim Yiduch Sela, which we translate, you know, and all living beings shall praise thee forever, or something like that, right? Or Amen Sela, Amen forever, or something like that. This is how we understand it. However, the scholars of the Bible, you know, have a different interpretation of what Sela is, because it doesn't always fit, you know, to take it in the sense of forever. So they say that Sela once upon a time was a signal in the Kapitel Tehillim, where we find it most often. We find it sometimes also in the prophets, but primarily we find it in Tehillim. Yeah, and they think that it was like a musical notation to the choir master, you know, to the head of the Levium, who is in charge of the choir, that either they raised their voice loud or something, or that they used musical instruments, played them loud at that particular point. But it usually marks like a turning point in the psalm itself, okay? It's like the end of an important verse or something like that.
Is there any, there's no literal translation then?
No, in that case they don't translate it, that's all. So as I said, if we take Selah in the sense, the first sense that I gave you, then forever is about the closest translation for it. But for the second one, they simply leave it untranslated. So you'll see that in the English translation of the Bible, they don't bother to translate. They simply keep the word Selah, S-E-L-A-H, yeah. Okay, weiter. Omalei Zeirim and Dehavas the Ravino. So Zeiri, who came from the town of Dehavas, Rashi comments that the reason why they mentioned the name of the town is because it was the much earlier Zeiri who was mentioned all the time, but he was not a contemporary of Ravino, who was one of the last of the Amoraim in Babylonia. Okay,
this is in Babylon.
Right, right. Remember that we're dealing at this particular point. This is the Talmud Bavli. Okay, so that therefore, more of the authorities who are cited over here are Babylonian authorities. Not all, of course, because, you know, continuing, first of all, they cite the earlier great authorities in Eretz Israel, and then also we find again and again, you know, that so-and-so came from there over here, and he said this and this, okay? He reported back. So, you know, and so they quote the Eretz Israel authorities as well. But
at that time, the Babylonian Jewish community was larger.
It probably was at that particular time for one reason. The Jews who lived in Babylonia, by and large, at that particular moment, were not too disturbed. And, you know, it was a community that was started with Golas Bavel. First Jews had, you know, the difficulties of being new in the land and everything else. But eventually, you know, they became acclimated to it. And they began to prosper in it. With the result that when Ezra and Nehemiah and so, you know, and Zerubbabel and the other leaders, you know, they wanted to ask the Jews to go back to Eretz Israel after they were given permission in the time of Koresh, King Cyrus of Persia. So they could only get something like 40,000 Jews, you know, who were willing to go back again. It was a very small group of people who went back to Eretz Israel. The rest were content to stay in Babylonia. Now, as time went on, of course, we find that, you know, Jewish life was established over there, but still, from the point of view of scholarship, the scholarship was all Eretz Israel. No question about that. There's where you had all, you know, the great rabbis and teachers and so on at that particular time. Well, I wouldn't know exactly. Probably about 200,000, 300,000, even more. For that, you would have to consult a book which deals with the sociology or an encyclopedia where they can give you these, you know, that type of information. Okay? Now, just to summarize, this remained in the situation. For example, Hillel came from Babylonia. He came in order to learn Torah notes as well. And he lived a life of poverty until, you know, he became prominent and so on. But he felt, you know, that this was the center where he had to come in order to learn Torah.
He was then born in Babylon.
Yeah. Born. And then we had a story, it's the end of Brochus, if you remember, about the Rabbi Elazar, who settled down in the Babylonian. He stayed in Babylonia over there, and what he didn't realize was that in the meantime, his Torah was sort of passé already, because there was just, well, there were new things, and as they said, you know, Gideim Nasut Yashim, that what were young kids once upon a time in Eretz Yisrael have now become like old goats. In other words, you know, they're full of Torah, and they're teaching Torah and everything else. So, you know, so Babylonia was not that I. However, what do we find? We find that when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi edited the Mishnah, and of course he spent, you know, many, many years at this process. And the Mishnah wasn't edited in the course of a year or 2 years. It took quite a few years to go over the various teachings that they have in the Mishnah, the Shesha Sidre. I mean, don't forget, it deals with such things as agricultural laws, with taharos, with all kinds of laws pertaining to purity, with the sacrificial system that you had in the Beis HaMikdash and things like that. Besides, you know, Shabbos and Yontif and the marriage and so on and so forth, and civil suits between one person and another, and criminal suits. So, you know, it took a great deal of time until they finally established what was to be considered an official text of the Mishnah. Now, two of his pupils had come from Babylonia. One was Rav and the other one is Shmuel. And they got smicha from him, and then they decided to go back to Babylonia and there found their own yeshivas. Now, this was the beginning of great Torah learning in Babylonia, right. And that continued in the various yeshivas that were established, Surah, Pumbedisa, Naharda, okay?
But did it
these
ever surpass,
the most famous ones.
Did it ever surpass Israel, the yeshivas in Israel?
All right, now what happened, okay? For several centuries, you had yeshivas there, and you had yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, right. Okay. But then, Eretz Yisrael fell under, you know, it was part of the Roman Empire. Okay, the Romans had conquered way back in the days yet of Pompey. And, he was the guy before Julius Caesar. This is part of, and then the two of them turned against each other, and Pompey lost, okay, and Caesar became the man. And it was part of the Roman Empire. Okay. Now, for several centuries, the Roman Empire continued sometimes tolerant and sometimes intolerant, depending upon, you know, what their relations with the Jews were. But about the 3rd, 4th century, you already have the Christians taking over. Now, when the Christians took over, they were worse to the Jews than the Romans themselves. Right. With the Romans, you did have persecution. I mean, I don't want to minimize that. After all, we know that we had several great scholars who died as martyrs because they defied the Roman authorities in the time of the Emperor Hadrian, for example. Yeah. Or, of course, in the rebellion against Rome, you know, which ended in the destruction of Beis HaMikdash and Bar Kokhba's rebellion. But at other times, the condition was not bad under Rome, simply because of the fact that the Romans, you know, they were polytheists. So they figured, all right, you Jews, you want to be Jews, you'll be Jews, you want to serve this god, you want to serve this goddess, whatever, you know, so they didn't. But with the Christians, they wanted already, you know, to convert everybody to Christianity, and they saw Judaism as one of the biggest rivals, okay? And we have a whole series now of all kinds of church-inspired legislation against the Jews and all kinds of persecution, with the result that the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael were hampered very greatly. This is the reason why, for example, although in Eretz Yisrael, there alone there was the authority really to be, what would we say, la'abir shonim, in other words, to declare that this was an ibiyar, right? This had to be done at the end of Adar, just prior to Nisan.
Yeah.
You know, to make a decision as to whether it's going to be an ibiyar, in which case they would then have a second Adar, or whether to leave it go, in which case then you have Nisan. Okay?
Right.
But all this was done on the basis of observation. It became impossible because the Roman authorities, and as I say now, when I say Roman authorities, I don't mean the pagan Romans,
no,
I mean
Christians.
The Christians, right, who were running the roost. So they made it impossible. This is why Hillel the IV, or whatever his number was, I mean, it was the last one of the line over there, the patriarchs that you had in Eretz Yisrael, he decided the time had come to figure out a calendar on the basis of calculation, so that from this point on there wouldn't be any question as to when Rosh Hashanah was, when Pesach was, and things like that. And so that's the calendar that forms the basis of what we have to this very day. But if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will enable us to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, then we should again do, you know, as the Torah tells us, that you have to HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim, you have to have a Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin has to see by observation, then declare, you know, when is Yom Tov and so on. Of course, with the electronics, it wouldn't be a big problem now to let the people in the diaspora know when it is, as it was in those days, which was the reason why we have 2 days Yom Tov, of course. Okay? So, as the Palestinian, I don't like to use the term Palestine, as the yeshivas in Eretz Israel, you know, they dwindled in their authority and the manpower and so on because of the persecution. So naturally, Babylonia took up the slack, and the yeshivas in Babylonia continued to be in existence for roughly close to about 1,000 years. Not only,
more tolerant to the Jews than,
by and large, although at times also they were subject to persecution by some of the Persian authorities. Yes. They came to an end, of course, because of the Mohammedans. But still, there was a Jewish community, you know, that continued in Persia and in Iraq and so on and so forth, you know, for centuries and until only more recent time.
Right.
But the great yeshivas, they came to an end roughly about the year 1000, 1100, something like that, that they came to an end. Why did they come to an end? Because of persecution, number one.
Is that but the event of Purim?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no much no. after.
After 14th century.
After Mohammed. After
right.
Mohammed.
Yeah, I'm talking about maybe 1,500 years after.
Very more recent, most recent holiday of all.
Yeah, that's, but remember, even the date of Purim, I mean, this would go back to roughly, let's say, about 500 prior to the Common Era, something like that. I'm talking about of our own era.
It was after Mohammed came into
it. Yeah, yeah, right, after Mohammed.
He was in 600 years.
Yeah, since, right, 632. Right, yeah. Correct. And you know, and then the Arabs, they began to conquer country after country and convert them to Islam, you see. So you know, the Jews naturally were affected by that. So that's one of the effects, I mean, that the Babylonian community. But I just wanted to point out that as a result, we're dealing first of all with several hundred years. All right, we figure Rabbi Yehuda Adasi in the Mishnah, we roughly date about the year 200, okay?
200 is the Common Era.
Of the Common Era.
Right.
The Talmud Yerushalmi, which was the product of the schools in Eretz Israel, roughly goes through maybe about the year 400, 450 would be tops, okay? The Babylonian Gemara goes at least through the year 500 of the Common Era. Okay, and then what happened after that? You had a whole series of generations of great rabbis and teachers who continued. You have what they call the Rabbanan Savarai. They interpreted, they explained it, and then of how. Then you have a somewhat later period, the Tekufat HaGeonim, the period of the various Geonim. Who were the Geonim? Geonim, they were the great teachers who were the heads of the yeshivot in Surim Pumpatita. You have, you know, great figures like Rav Hai Gaon, Rav Shmira Gaon, Rav Saadia Gaon, and so on. Gaon was the title given to the head of the yeshiva.
Yeah.
Okay? And they were great in Torah, no question about that. These are very great people. So Babylonia remained a very fruitful center, but as time went on, other centers arose. There arose centers of Torah in North Africa, for example, Karawan, which I guess today would be Morocco. And then you had, of course, the rise of the yeshivas in Spain, and then in France, and to a certain extent in Italy and so on, but particularly, you know, Spain, France, Germany.
Is
you know,
that where Rashi right. went? In France, he went to yeshiva
yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so this is the story, you know, of how Torah was spread from one community to another, one area to another, and the succession continued. So this is why I say, I mean, what started us off about was this Zairi, that he, you know, since Ravina was one of the later ones, so it could not be the Zairi who is continually referred to in the Gemara in other contexts, but it happens to be a man who came from Dehavas, who was a contemporary of Rav Hoshaya. Yes. There won't be a diaspora. Okay, very good. Excellent observation. Okay, we're all gathered there. It's Israel. No, that's Eretz Israel. Yeah, that was established at the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai received permission from the Roman Emperor to establish a little school over there, And the emperor never realized that this school was to be the salvation of Yiddishkeit. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Omegay Night. So, anyway, Omalei Zairi Medei Havas, the rabbin, he says, Atun Mehochem Asnisu. You derive it from this particular pasuk? Whoa, I skipped something over here. My eye went down to another, which is the same thing, except they bring a different quotation there, interpreting. All right. So, Omalei Zairi Medei Havas, the rabbin, he said, Atun Mehochem Asnisu Lo. You derive it from that particular pasuk, you know, the one in Tehillim, that Ratzis Hashem Atzecha, and so on, the one that we just interpreted. Anan, he says, we, Mehochem Asnisimla, we derive it, in other words, we in Babylonia, we get it from a different pasuk. It says, V'yato Tishma Hashemayim, you, O God, will hearken in heaven, V'solachta L'chatos HaAmcho Yisrael, and you will forgive the sin of your people Israel. This is a part of the prayer of Shlomo at the time when he dedicated the Beis Hamikdash. Omer Rab Tanchum Dereid Rabbi Chiyo Ish Kfar Akko. See Kfar Akko? You see Akko is mentioned Akko, quite a few times over there. So he says Einak Shomen Tzorin, he says rain is not withhold Elohim Kain unless Nischaivu Sonehen Shal Yisrael Kloya. Literally the enemies of Israel deserve to be destroyed. But he doesn't mean the enemies of Israel. Instead of saying, you know, rain is withheld only if Israel itself deserves destruction. This is what he's saying. But he doesn't want Chas V'Shalom to say something like that, so they say, so they didn't show Yisrael. Okay? And we'll see another case a little further on, where they use the expression, so they didn't show Talmidei Chachomim. Where they really mean Talmidei Chachomim, they don't mean the enemies of Talmidei Chachomim. So you have to get it from the context, you understand what they're saying. It's what we call a euphemism. In other words, it's a nice way of saying it because they don't want to say it in the harsh way. All right. But the understanding is clear. Now, how do we know that? So he brings a pasuk from the book of Job, Sefer Iyov. Shenemar says, the pasuk says, Siya gam chom yigzalu meimei sheleg sha'ol chotol. Which, again, as I told you, you cannot go exactly according to the literal interpretation, but you have to understand how they are interpreting it. Okay. Siyo means drought, gamchom, also heat, yigzalu meimei shelek, they steal the waters, the snow water. All right. Because the idea in Job over there is the fact that, you know, when you have the heat and the drought, then all the waters that had accumulated because of the snow, you know, they disappear. They dry up. This is what it means over there in the book of Job. Okay? And then he says, Sha'ol Chotol, those who have sinned, even into Sha'ol. Sha'ol, of course, is, you know, it's like Gehinnom. Yeah. Sometimes it means either the grave or it means like, you know, Gehinnom. It's a synonym for it and so on. They have sinned and they deserve Gehinnom. So how is he interpreting? He's interpreting, says that why are the waters withheld? Because these people have sinned grievously. This is what he's trying to say. So this is a pasuk that he quotes in order to say that because of the sins of people of Israel who deserve to be destroyed, this is the reason why rain is withheld. So Amalei Zehuv Dehavas, the Ravino says, Atun Nehochem Asnisullah. You derive it from that particular pasuk in the book of Job. It says, Anon Nehochem Asnisullah. I have a much simpler explanation. Pasuk says, of course, in the Shema Yisrael, the Yotzal Shemayim, right? That God will
close the
withhold, literally, the rain, you know, from the heavens, right? Vavarata Mehera, and you will be lost, and you will, you know, very quickly. Okay. Omer Rav Chisto, Rav Chisto said, El Shem Netzorin, El Bishvil Bitl Trumos Amasros. He says that the reason why rain is withheld is because people are negligent when it comes to separating the Trumos Amasros. Truma, if you remember, there are different types of Truma. The one that we usually think about Truma is that you take off, let's say, 2% of the wine, the corn, the oil, and so on, and you give that to the Kohen. That's Truma. Another form of truma is, of course, what we call challah. What is challah? that a certain portion of dough has to be taken and given to the Kohen. Now naturally, for the Kohen to get these things, he had to be in a state of Tara. Since we don't know who is in a state of Tara today, and we don't know, whether the yichus of the Kohen, so to speak, is 100%, can he verify the yichus? So therefore, what do we do today with trumas and masros? With the trumas, so we burn it. It's exactly what we do, okay?
Well, what do you mean by a state of Tara? He has to be in that
purity.
In what
state
respect?
Of purity.
In what respect?
Purity in the sense that he's not come into contact with the dead, for example.
Oh, okay.
And if he comes into contact with the dead, then what was the way that they achieved Tara? We would think that just going into the mikvah, but that's not so. In addition to that, they had to have the ashes of the Pora Aduma, which was mixed with Mayim Chaim, sprinkled on him. If you didn't have that, then you were still in a state of impurity. Since we don't have any more Pora Aduma, so therefore we cannot carry out this idea of Tara to the nth degree the way it was, as long as the Beis HaMikdash is still in existence. So that's Trumos. Okay, now Masros, as we know, there are different types. So there are three types of Masros. Maser, of course, from the word Eser, or Asara, meaning ten, a tenth, right? And the first Maser, what we call Maser Rishon, this is the 10% of the crop, whatever it may be, that was given to the Levi. Okay? And by the way, the Levi also had to give 10% to the Kohen, called Trumas Maser, okay? Then they had Maser Sheni, this was taken by the Jewish farmers, brought to Yerushalayim, and there, they ate it and rejoiced in the presence of God. Now, of course, if the stuff would spoil beforehand, then he had to sell it for money and put the money aside and then use that in Yerushalayim in order to buy food and drink and so on, and rejoice that he, his family, Kain, the Levi, everybody's welcome to it, okay? And then you had Maaser Ani, which every third and sixth year of the cycle, this was a 10% given directly to the poor people. Okay? So, what he's saying is then, that why is rain being withheld? It's because people are negligent in fulfilling the obligation that they have in Trumas and Masros. Yes?
The Maaser Ani, is that in place of the Maaser?
In place of Maaser Sheni. Okay. Right. In other words, you have a 7-year cycle. In the first 6 years of the cycle, you always have Maaser Rishon. And that went, as we said, to the Levi. Okay? Then, the first, second, fourth, and fifth years, you had Maaser Sheni. And year 3 and 6, those 2 years, you had Maaser Ani. And all this, of course, is based upon, Pesukim in the Torah, speaking about various Maasros. Okay? Now, what is his proof for that particular thing? So, again, he takes the same pasuk that we had before, taken from the book of Job. Shenemar, he says, Siyo gamchom yigzalu meimei shelek. Again, drought and heat will rob the waters, the snowy waters. Now, you laugh. So, how do we derive it? So the answer is, as Rashi explains, it says, Siya and Chom, Siya is drought. Alright, so we know now that we're talking about drought. When does drought come? Chom, when you have the hot season, right, which is the season of the summertime. Now why does he select the summertime? The answer being because in the summer, this is when, the various crops are coming to fruition. And therefore you can take your trumas and maasros. Yigzalu, and these guys, they go and they steal meimei shelek, in other words, the trumas and the maasros that should have been given during those years.
Where do you see the pasuk repeated again?
Siyo gamchom yigzalu meimei shelek. He said that before in connection.
Where is it repeated?
You see where that little
go up
line is?
About three lines.
Fancy.
There's
line
where we had it for
line.
When he says that it was because of the sins
they
deserved
destruction.
No, I know.
I see it for the first time, but where is it repeated?
You see where there
okay,
are
go three lines down from there.
Three lines down. The third line.
El Bishvil, Bittel, Truman, Samasros. You see that? You see Truman, Samasros?
Yeah.
Shnei Matzir, Gamtom, Yisgul, Meim, Mishal. I said this is Sadash. Yeah. My Mashma. What do we derive from this? So he says, Tana, the Vei Rabbi Yishmael, one of the Tanoim of the school of Rabbi Yishmael said, Bishvil devorim shetzivisi eschem b'imos hachamo v'lo asisem yigzilu mekem b'imos shelig b'imos hakshamim. Okay, so he explains now how he understands that pasuk. All right, let's follow it. He says, Bishvil devorim shetzivisi eschem, because of the things which I commanded you. Now, in other words, what is he doing? He's connecting the word tsiya, which we translated as drought, right, with what? With tsiva.
Commanded.
All right? So, therefore, he's saying, because of the things which I commanded you, bimos hachama, what you should be doing in the summer months, right? In other words, you know, the giving your trumas and maaseros, v'lo asisem, and you didn't do it. So yigzalu mikem meme shelig bimos hakshamim. Therefore, they will withhold from you the snow waters in the time that the raising season comes. In other words, the rain, which should be falling during the rainy season, right, will not be falling at that time. Okay? As I said, you can't go by the literal meaning of these psukim, because that you have to take a look at the Tanakh and see what is the context in order to understand a little bit better. And needless to say, one of the most difficult books to understand happens to be the Book of Job. I'll have to tell you that right now. It requires a great deal of concentration and understanding that the language is difficult, it's very poetic, and, you know, like in poetry in general, you have to understand what is the reference, what is, what is he saying?
Right,
yeah. And so for that, we have to rely upon our commentators like Rashi, the Radak, Tzudis, and others and so on, who have commented upon the book of Job. Okay. Now, all right, the next statement that we have here, Amar Rav Shimon ben Pasi. Rav Shimon ben Pasi said, Enak Shomen Ne'etzorin El Bishvil Mesapri Loshen Hora. He says, rain is withheld only because of the people who slander. You know, they relate Loshen Hora. Shinehemar. And again, he takes a pasuk, and you'll see that what he does with the pasuk is to make it, to make it fit the bill, so to speak. Okay, the pasuk says in Mishlei, Book of Proverbs, it says Ruach Sofon, the Cholel Geshem, literally, the north wind will give birth to rain. Ufonim Nizomim Lashon Seisef, and just like the north wind gives birth to rain. Or maybe to chulol, or sometimes it can be just the opposite. It might be to withhold rain. The north wind may withhold rain. Just as what? Ponim mizomim. Just as, now the literal meaning over there means like an angry countenance, lishon seser, suffers because of lishon seser. In other words, because of slander. Okay? So, Amar Rav Salo, alright, so in other words, what he's saying over here is, you know why Ruach Tzofen Techol El Geshem, why the north wind is literally, in this particular, I gave two translations of Techol El. One meaning Techol El is to give birth, right? And the other one would be like, for example, Chilul Shabbos or something like that. In other words, to profane, to make it, or Lo Yachil De Boro, is not to literally profane his word, is not to change his word and so on. So the north wind comes, but instead of bringing rain, it stops the rain from coming. And why is that the reason? Why does it happen that way? Because ponim nizomim loshen seisa, people who are azei ponim, they're impudent, they're arrogant. The arrogant people are slandering us. That's the reason why rain is withheld. Omar Rav Sala, Omar Rav Hamnuna says in Akshomim Ne'etzorin El Bishvil Azei Ponim. He says that the rain is withheld because, it's not withheld except because of people who are arrogant. Shenemar, and he takes the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. There the pasuk says, Vayimonu revivim, that the showers were withheld, umalko shlohoyo, nor did the later rain fall, right? Umetzach isha zonu hoyoloch, and nevertheless, you had the, literally, the brow A whore, you had it. Now, again, if you go back to the context in Yirmiyahu, what he's telling the people of Israel is that the Ribbono Shel Olam withheld rain from them, and yet they continued, you know, to be arrogant, to be impudent, and to continue in their whoring. What whoring am I talking about? I'm talking about whoring after, for example, idolatry. Because, you know, he condemns the people, you know, for deserting God and running instead to the false gods, the idols and so on, worshipping them. So, so this is the meeting. So it says, because they have this Meitzach Isha Zoyna, right? They have the arrogant look of a whore on their face. I mean, the whore is never ashamed, you see. The rest of the pasuk, by the way, is Me'anto Hikole, which means that you refuse even to feel shame about it. Okay? So, because of the fact that, you know, that they have this arrogance, they feel no shame, whatever, this is the reason why rain is being withheld by the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Omer Rav Salo, Omer Rav Hanuna, that kol odom sheyesh lo azus ponim sof nichshal ba'avir. Any person who has this arrogance, in the end he's going to stumble into sin. Shenemar, and again he uses the same pasuk, meitzach yishezen over your law. And as I said, the rest of it, you know, that he refused, you know, to repent, but this will be the result. Rav Nachman Omar, he says, b'yodua, it's known, shenichshal ba'avera. We know that he has already stumbled into sin. If he is an arrogant person, undoubtedly he has already stumbled into sin. Shenema, now how does he get that? He says, hoyaloch, the pasuk says, you know, that you had the meitzach ishazona, right? V'lo ne'emar, yiyaloch. We're not talking about the future. It doesn't say you're going to have the brow of a woman, you know, who is a whore. Yeah. But he says, you know, that you had Hoya, you know, Hoya is past and Yiyah, you know, is the future. So obviously he must have sinned precisely because he is arrogant. So since we're talking about Azay Ponim or Azus Ponim, right? A very detestable quality in most cases, although we did have a pasuk, we did have a teaching some weeks ago that said that a Talmud Chacham has to have just a little bit arrogance in him, not a lot, but a little bit. In other words, he has to be able to stand up for his own principle and be able to influence others, you know, the principles of Yiddishkeit, and not, you know, simply be a bending reed all the time. So a little bit is all right, but not a lot. Okay. Omar Rabba Bar Rav Huna says, "Kol Adam sheyesh lo azus ponim, mutar likrosei rasha." If a person has this arrogance in him, then in that particular case, you can call him a wicked person. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Heyes ish rasha b'fono." He says the wicked man actually, you know, carries on arrogantly, you know, in his own face. All right. Now, of course, the question is, how do you get that? Okay. So, take a look at the Rashi for a second. Hayez ish. He says, sheyesh bo azus ponim. The person who has azus ponim in him. So, emolo, in that case, you can say to him, Rasha. Call him a Rasha, befod of, in his own face, to his own face. Right? The aim bo mishum malkos, and you will not be liable for receiving malkos. Kedavim maseches kedushin, as we said in kedushin, mishum davar zeh bilvad butolakrosi rasha. But for this reason only can you call him a wicked person. Now we have to understand. This Gemara in Malkos, which says that hachoshed b'ksherim, if you make derogatory remarks about people, or if you have even suspicions about a person who is a perfectly righteous person, and you say that he is a Rasha, then in that case, Chayav Malkos, you deserve to get Malkos. You know what Malkos are, right? They take a strap or a stick or something, they give you a good knocking, you know, like what the British call caning, you know. Yeah. So normally you're not allowed to say to a person, you're a Russian. But the Gemara says that in this case, if a person has so much arrogance or impudence, then you can call him a Russian to his face and you'll not be liable to Malkus, because it's important, you know, that you have to be able to stand up against him and maybe to try to correct him if it's possible to correct him. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak Omar, he adds the following. He says, "Mutalis Naisai." He says, "You're even permitted to hate him." Shneimar V'yoyis Ponov Yeshune, which means literally that you know, the arrogance and an expression will be changed, will be darkened, or something like that. Now, this is the pshat, but of course, needless to say, we're talking drash. We're not talking pshat right now. So the Yispon of Yeshuna, he says, take it in the sense of Azponim, right? Or Yisponim, in other words, his arrogance, his impudence, he says. Yeshuna, as far as Yeshuna is concerned, Al Tikra Yeshuna, don't read it, in other words, don't understand it here for the purpose of drash. As Yeshuna, Ella Yisone, understand that its meaning will be hated. All right, now of course, what is he saying? We know that you're not supposed to hate anybody. It's a pasuk. It's a pasuk in the Torah, right? Where it says, you know, Al tisna sachicha bilvavecha. Another interpretation. Omer Abkatin, so that all of these things we have, why is being withheld? So each one has a different drash as to why, okay? Omer Rav Katina says, in Akshom Netzorin, Ela Bishvil Pitl Torah, says, the rain is being withheld only because of the neglect of Torah. Shenemar, the pasuk here that he quotes is a pasuk that we have in the book of Koheles, where it says, Batzaltayim Yimacha Mekore, which means in its own original context that because of laziness, the roof falls. English translation is sloth, but how many people use the word sloth? I mean, we know Otzel is lazy. Okay, so about time, because people are lazy, you know, for example, the roof, you know, needs fixing, but you're too lazy to go up to the roof and to fix it. So you know what's going to happen? Yimacha Makore, the roof is going to come down upon you, because you know once it starts to rain or something like that, you know, it spoils, it rots, etc., etc. So if you don't take care of it, you know, this is what happens. But again, you know, they give a drash. What is the drash? The drash is Bishvil Atzlus, because of the laziness Sheyobi Yisrael, that you know we found among the people of Israel Shleyosku BaTorah, that they did not, they didn't busy themselves in the Torah. So Natsisenu Shalakodesh Baruch Hu Mach. So the Rebbeinu Shleilam, literally. Yeah, all right, we'll take it in its literal sense. So the enemy of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu became Moch. Now what is Moch? Moch means low. You know, Yimach, right?
Mach, no.
Yeah, right. No, that's the difference. That's spelled with a ches. Oh. That means to be wiped out.
Oh, to fight.
Oh. Right. You know, like Timcha Zecha Amalek, you want to wipe out the memory of Amalek, you know. Okay? Yeah. So Moch, now he says, we ain't Moch, and the word moch means elo oni, it means poor. Shenema v'im och hu me'akecha, which means, there they're talking in the Torah about the last chapter in the book of Ayikva, the book of Leviticus, deals with what we call arochim. Arochim means that, you know, people say, for example, I am going to give my erech as a donation to the Beis HaMikdash. So you go according to how right. old a person is.
What is an erech?
Value.
Right. Now the value depends upon the sex of a person, the gender of a person, and also depends upon the age. Obviously, the mature man who is strong and capable, he has a valuation, let's say, of 50 shekel, okay? A woman in the same age is, let's say, about 40 or something like that, okay? Now, older people and very young people, naturally, they also have a lesser amount. And take a look in the Torah and see, what the various figures are. And then you can also give, you could donate, the value of your house or the value of the field or something like that to the Beis HaMikdash, in which case what happens? So you have to have a committee led by a Kohen, committee of 10 assessors who come and they assess the value, and then you have to give that to the Beis HaMikdash. So then the Torah says, that if the person is too poor to do it, then what do? So, they arrange, payments, over installments or something like that, but you have to give a penalty of a chomish, of a fifth more, that you would have to give if you want to redeem it or something like that. So, yeah, it's not interest, but it's a penalty, so to speak, okay? So you have, these different evaluations. So the word moch over there is, in a sense, to become too poor that you can't do it. As a matter of fact, I could have taken a better pasuk than that, because it says also in the book of Vayikra in Parsha Behar, it says, "V'chi yomur chochicha," that if your brother, becomes poor, so in that case, then you deal with such things as, for example, how can he redeem himself, and if he has to be sold by the Beis Din in order to satisfy a debt, and so what are the terms under which the boss, can utilize his services and things like that and so on. So, and then of course, the even better possibility, Amuch Achicha, right? And then it says, V'chazaktabo, you have to strengthen him, you have to make it possible for your brother, to live, help him, so that he doesn't have to resort, to sell his services as a slave or anything like that. It's your business, your obligation to help him whichever way you can. And we know then that the word boch then means poor in this particular case, okay? Or low. So, as he explains, Vishvil Atzlus, because of the laziness, Shehoya B'Yisrael, Shleyoska B'Torah, so Natsa Sonish HaKadosh Baruch Hu boch, so the enemy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning, the people of Israel, to turn into poverty, V'yein boch Ela Oni, Shenemar V'yein boch Hu Mi'artecha. All right. Now, not only that, but we translated the word Hamikore, right, as the roof, right? Yeah. Well, some translate it as the rafters, but it means the ceiling beams. This is really what it means, okay? The Ein Mikore, El HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you see, now you have to understand, the same word can be understood as a noun, or the same word can be understood as a verb, okay? Now, in the pasuk that we quoted, in reality, it is a noun. But in the verse that they're now going to bring, which is from the Borchi Nafshi, Psalm 104, so there we say, Amekore, right? Mekore, who's the Mekore? Elah Kodesh Borcha, that's he's the Mekore. Shenemar, Amekore, Mayim Ali Yosef. What does the Rabbeinu Shalom do? Literally over there, it means that he builds his upper chambers, in other words, the higher elevations, on the water itself. We're speaking over there about the fact that the Ben Shalom first created the various waters, right? And then he created dry land, he created the mountains and everything else and so on, so that he raised these above the waters, okay? But what they're doing is to say, the Pasuk in Koheles, about Saltayim Yimach HaMekore, means that HaMekore, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, who is the one who causes Yimach, who causes the poverty. Why? Because Bat Saltayim. It is because of the laziness when they should be dealing with the upper things, in other words, the higher things in life, namely what? The Torah. It's a little involved, I'll guarantee you that. But nevertheless, you have to think along the lines of how is he explaining it, how is he interpreting it. This is the point. All right, let me get right there. We certainly want to finish this page yet tonight and start in and get to the top of Daf Ches over there. Okay.
Rabbi Yosef.
Yeah, all right. Rabbi Yosef Omer Mehocha. Rabbi Yossi derives the same idea, you know, that because of the neglect of Torah, this is the reason why rain is withheld. He derives it from a different pasuk. He says, V'yato le'ro or bohir, V'yato le'ro or, right. It's also from the book of Job. Now, they did not say literally
light,
but in the original, probably it means lightning, okay? Bohir hu bashfokim. They didn't see this light flashing in the skies, in the, right? The ruach obra, and then the wind passed by, but the tahareim, and it cleared it. Now, what Job is saying over there, again, as I say, you know, we have to know what is the original and how does it interpret it. The original, what he's saying is that they were hoping, you know, that it's going to be rain because they saw flashes of lightning in the skies, but the wind came and blew away the clouds, and there was nothing. The rain didn't come, right? All right, so he says, we ain't or el Torah. This we know, you know, the famous Rosh, that Torah, that or, light, means Torah. So, therefore, lo ra'u or, therefore, would mean what? That they did not see light. In other words, they didn't see the light of the Torah. They neglected the Torah. You understand? Because how do we know that or is to be, is the equivalent of Torah? Shenemar, because it's written, kiner mitzvah, the Torah or. The pasuk of Mishlei, which says that the mitzvah is like a light, right? And Torah is like
light.
Illumination. Okay. What?
Torah or?
Yeah. But of course, take a look.
Okay.
No. I just want to show you something. Long before he came. I don't see it over here right now, but we have also, you know, their mitzvah, the Torah Or, I mean, it's used also for finding context, let's say in the Chumash, where do we find, you know, reference to it in the Gemara and so on and so forth, the Torah Or. Take a look in the you know, a real traditional Chumash, you'll see that they have references called by that name. Okay,
sorry.
But this is it. Yeah, and of course, I mean, their mitzvah, the Torah Or, this, incidentally, is also, you know, like a pasuk in order to justify, for example, the lighting of a yahrzeit candle. Because ner mitzvah, you know, the lighting of this candle of mitzvah is Torah Or. It's in order to bring, you know, the light of Torah in memory of the departed. And so on. This is why we learn in memory of the departed, we light the candle, and so on and so forth. Okay? And it is bright in the skies, which means what? That the rain didn't fall. Because of what? Because of the fact that, you know, they neglected lo ra'u or, right? They neglected the study of Torah. That's how he interprets the puzzle. Okay. Tanadei Rabbi Shmuel, the school of Rabbi Shmuel taught the following, afilu bishor shevakia nase behorin behorin v'ritalamoto rach obro vatatahare, which they take this pasuk to say, you know, the orbo here, they say, even at the time when the sky becomes behorin behorin. Now, this is an adjective derived from the word bahir, which normally would mean clear, but Rashi understands it differently. We have a word in the you know, Parsha Tazria, where they deal with various forms of leprosy, okay? And one of the signs of leprosy is that if you see that the skin becomes beharos, beharos, in other words, it becomes all kinds of little white spots over there. And so this is a sign of leprosy. Of course, the coin has to come and to determine whether it really is or not, and so on. But what he's saying is that even when the sky, let's say, is like you have a white cloud here and a white cloud here and another white cloud here, but nevertheless, and you think that's lahori talamoto, you know, that it's going, the clouds are going to bring rain and dew to fall, but nevertheless, rach over vataharim, the wind comes and it just, you know, it clears them away so that the rain does not fall. Omer Rav Ami, He says that the reason why rain is withheld is because of the sin of robbery. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, again, Al Kapayim Kisa Or, which means literally, yeah, because of the hands, so the light has been covered up. So he says, Ba'avon Kapayim, because of the sins committed by your hands. Now, what sin is committed by hands? The answer is robbing. You understand? So Kisa Or, therefore the light has been covered up. The Yain Kapayim Melech Chomas. And, you know, Kapayim refers to Chomas. Chomas, as we said, means, you know, acts of violence. Because how do you perform acts of violence? With your hands. This is the thing that you do when you do it. Shenemar, or Min HaChomas, Asher B'Chapeihem. This is a pasuk that we find in the book of Jonah. So anyway, he says that, you know, that the people of Nineveh, you know, they repented from the violence in their hands. Okay, so we know then that the hands, you know, are a source, and therefore violence, robbery, and so on, they cause rain to be withheld. The Ein Or Elamotar. And how do we know that the word Or means rain in this particular context? Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Yafitz Anan Oro. The cloud scatters its light, which means obviously not that it's light, but when it rains, it causes it to become lighter. I mean, the clouds, after the rain falls, so it becomes bright again. So that's what the pasuk there means, okay? But here he's taken simply that the word Or is a synonym for rain, and so that therefore, because of the violence that they have in their hand, this is the reason why the Or, meaning the rain, is withheld. Maitakante, so how can you correct the situation? So he says, Yarbe Bitfilot, he should increase the prayers that he has. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vayitzav Olehu B'mafgiyah, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam commanded it, or commanded her, concerning the, literally the target or something like that, but again, you can't translate it literally. You have to translate it in, as he explains it. He says, "V'ein pegiya," the word pegiya, right? El tefila, right. He says, you know, this is a term that means praying. So Ve'etzav Olehu B'mafgiya means then that if there is no rain, then Rebbeinu Shel Olam commands you, you know, that you should do what? That you should pray harder. Shenemar, Yatol Tispalel Bad Hamazeh, Yal Tifgabi. Do not pray on behalf of this people, nor should you Tifgabi. You should not, you know, literally hit me with prayers, okay? You should not pray unto me. So we know that the word Pagia then refers to prayers. So if we have a lack of rain, what can we do to remedy the situation? Pray. Pray harder. The Yomer Rabami, and Rabami said, "My Dechsiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in Tehillim where it says, in Keha Barzel, that if the iron is weak, literally, the hu lo fonim kilkel, and he did not, kilkel, he did not sharpen the edges?" He says, Imra Isa. Naturally, again, that's the pasuk that's the literal meaning, but how does he take it? So he says, Imra Isa Rakia. If you see that the sky is Shekeha Kabazel, it's as hard as iron. In other words, the rain is not coming down, Milahori Talamota, right? And it's not coming down, there's no dew or rain falling. You know why? It's Bishvil Masai Hador. It's because of the actions of this generation, Shehein Mikul Kolin, who are corrupt, so to speak. In other words, it takes on Ponim Kilkal, that, you know, the Kilkalu Ponim. In other words, they're doing all the wrong things. They're impudent, etc., etc. Shehein Mikul Ponim Kilkal. Matakantan, again, how can we remedy the situation? Says, Yizgabru Barachamim. Let them become more merciful. Shenema b'chayolim yigaber, that literally there means that he gains strength, right? And then it says v'yisron hechsher chochma, and even more advantageous is the acquisition of wisdom. But again, how does he do that? So he says kol shekein, all the more reason v'hushru ma'asehen meyikora. If their deeds to begin with were righteous, then in that particular case, what would not have happened? We would not have had any drought. The rain would have fallen. So, if we see that there is a lack of rain, we know it's because Shehein Mekulkolin, they're spoiled in their actions, and therefore Yisgabru Barachimim, let them increase their mercies towards other people, and that will be, you know, Yigaber Chayalim, Chayalim Yigaber, they gain strength. Okay.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Reish Lakish Amar, Im Ra'iso Talmud, Shelemudo Kosherlov Kabazel. If you see a student and his learning is as difficult for him even as iron, in other words, a hot ashvera cup when it comes to learning, right? So you know, the reason why he says, Bishvil Mishnosu Shena Sidurolov, the reason is because what he has learned is not really literally arranged in him. In other words, he hasn't really sat down, you know, to organize his learning so that he can remember better these things. Shenemar, and again he quotes this pasuk, "V'hu lo panim kalkal," right? That he did not, literally make easier for him his knowledge of Torah. You can see they can read all kinds of interpretations into the same word. So Maita Kante, what is the way that you can get, you know, to improve the situation? The answer is Yarba v'yeshiva, let him sit longer and sit down and go over it more. Shenem avachayalim yigaber, right? And if you do so, the yisron hechsher chachma, then of course it means that you'll get a much better grasp on the wisdom. And kol shekein, and even more so, you know, this would be the result in mishnosei sedura lo miyakora. If to begin with, he had organized his knowledge along these lines. Kihoda Reish Lakish, even as we have the example of Reish Lakish, Hava Misade Masnisen Arbon Zimnin Keneged Mem Yom Shenitun Torah, he would review and go over and organize the material that he had learned 40 times to correspond to the 40 days in which the Torah were given. Remember, you know that Moses was on Mount Sinai 40 days and 40 nights. So 40 times he would review his material, then the idol would come to Rabbi Yochanan, and then he would appear before Rabbi Yochanan in order to discuss, you know, what he had learned together with him.
Was this the Reish Lakish that we talked about?
Yes, it's the same Reish Lakish. Well,
that's
right.
A different individual.
Right, right. You see, he became a great Talmud Chacham. Right. Ravada Barahava, Misadim Masisim Esum Yarbozim. He would review his material 24 times. Keneged Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, because we have, as I told you before, in the traditional arrangement of the Tanakh, wherein, for example, let's say Melachim Aleph and Beis count as one book, Shmuel Aleph and Beis count as one book, that the Treyasa count as one book, and so on. So there are 24 books of the in the Tanakh, so that therefore he would go over it 24 times. In imitation of the fact that of course it indicates that he felt so great a devotion to Torah that in order to be able to expound on Torah he had to review again and again and again. So we see the importance of review in order to really understand the Torah well that we have learned. V'ayol akami the Rava, and then he would appear before Rava. I'll do one more over here. Rava Omar, Rava said, Im Ra'isa Talmud shel limudoi kosher lo kabazel. If you see a Talmud whose learning is very difficult of him, unto him, even like, you know, iron is as hard as iron to him, Bishvil Rabo, because he has a teacher, She'inu Masbilei Ponim, who does not literally show a favorable countenance to him, in other words, his teacher is dissatisfied with him. So if you have a student who finds it difficult to learn because his teacher, let's say, is impatient with him or is dissatisfied with his progress, Shenema v'hu lo ponim kilkal, right? So maita kamte, then how should he remedy the situation? So he says, yarbe olav rahim, he should get many, many friends, shenema v'chayolam yigabir, right? Get many troops, so to speak. Then the yisron hafsher chokhma, and then, you know, that way you'll be able to improve your knowledge of Torah. In other words, they should go and speak to, you know, the Rebbe and so on, and get the Rebbe, you know, to understand that this student needs much more personal attention, that he should not become impatient with him. And then again, we say kol shekein, and even more so, m'hushu u'ma'aseh b'fnei rabbo, me'yikara. If his teacher found that everything that he was doing was proper to begin with, then in that particular case, it would make the job that much easier, because the Rebbe would have a different attitude towards his Talmud. So, if you're having difficulty, speak to the Rebbe, go over it, try to learn, try to organize your material, and don't despair. Torah is wonderful, and the more we go over it, the greater it is. Well, we have a minion tonight, so we can say a Rabbanan Kaddish.
You're on. But now on what?
Okay, we're on Ches Amud Aleph right now. Okay. Right. All right. So we are, let's see, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, about 16 lines down, where it begins with Vayomer Rabbami.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen a little in the margin, it says a shom over there.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. Vayomer Rabbami. So Rabbami said, another thing that he said, is my dichsiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk, im yishoch hanochosh b'lo lochash, v'yen yisron leval haloshon. I have to tell you, first of all, that apparently on this page they are quoting and interpreting psukim from Sefer Kohelis, the book of Ecclesiastes. So since they've already spoken about, you know, im keha barzel, will open him kilkal and so on, so let it go to another pasuk over there. And this pasuk says, "Im yishoch hanochosh b'lei lochosh," that if the serpent bites without being influenced by the lochosh is in this case, you know, the charm that the snake charm is trying to tame it with. They then says Kohelis ben Rison about haloshon. Then what advantage is there to the man with the tongue? In other words, to the charmer. I mean, how can that the charmer is ineffective if you know the serpent bites in spite of what happens? Okay. So anyway, how do they interpret it? That's already a different story. All right. So they take the words im yishak hanochosh, and they say im ra'isa dor shahashemayim mishtakin kenechoshes. If you see a generation where the skies are like rusty like copper, all right, dark like copper, rusty like copper, then with the result that they will not permit dew and rain to fall, right? Of course, I mean, we've seen skies, we know that, you know, times you get a sky that's very, very dark, it's not raining yet, but you know that it might rain, but it doesn't rain. Okay. So if you see skies that seem to announce that rain is going to fall, and yet there is no rain, there is no dew, it's not happening, so why isn't there rain? So the answer is, b'shvil lochashe lechisha she'in bador. The reason is because you don't have the lochashe lechishas. Now, a moment ago we translated that, the people who know literally how to charm, how to utter charms, right? But you have to remember that the word lechisha also is related to the word lachash. What does lachash mean? Lachash means silence, quiet. Now, what is our tefillah b'lachash? Of course, that's what we call Shema Nesra.
Is it related to the word kishav?
No.
Kishav is magic.
That's kishav. Right, right, yeah. With, that's spelled already with a chof, Shin Fei.
No,
this is Lamin Ches Shin.
Okay.
So they're not related to each other. Okay?
But in this particular case, it means silence.
And so here, now he's taking the word, as I said, in Koheles, it has one meaning. In other words, in its original text, it has the meaning of those who can whisper the right formulas, you know, in order to tame the snake, so to speak, right? But since the word also implies silence, and silence to us is also prayer, because what do we call Shemoneh Esrei? Kol Shemoneh Esrei, Tefillah Belachash, literally the prayer which is uttered silently. Okay? So that therefore what he's saying is the reason why the rain, you know, the sky looks like it's going to bring rain and yet it doesn't, is because you do not have in the generation in Bador what? Lo Chashe Lechishes, people who know how to pray
silently.
Yeah, silently. Not necessarily silently, but they don't know how to pray. The Rabbeinu Shlom. You don't have the real davners, you see,
uh-huh.
who can affect, who can bring about tevis through their prayers. My takamtan. So, what can you do in order to better the situation? So they say, Yelchu etzel mishadeh lilchosh. Go to someone who knows how to pray properly. When he prays, you know that it might have, you know, influence the Rebbeinu Shalom. Dichsiv, and there's a pasuk for that. What is the pasuk? The pasuk says, Yagid olav reyo, then he will, this happens to be a quotation from the book of Job, he says, he will confess concerning him, reyo, which in this case, the original meaning there is really like the thought he can understand, okay? So, the idea being, you know, that he knows how to pray on behalf of his friend, okay? This is one possible, this is a possible interpretation, and Rashi, as a matter of fact, is pretty much in accord with that. You take a look over there, Yagid Olov Reyo, he says, Yispalil Olov Chavero. Let, you know, the other person pray for him, right? And he says, Vigabe Gashom Mitzibiyov, and it happens to be in reference to a passage concerning God and, granting rain in the book of Job. All right. Now, then, the next part of that pasuk that they started with was V'yein Yisro Neval HaLoshon, right? That there is no advantage, you gain nothing from the person who is the Baal HaLoshon, the person who has the tongue. In other words, what does it mean? So he gives an interpretation, says, Mi she'ef shalo lilchosh v'yeino lochesh ma adoli yeshlo. If a person knows how to daven on behalf of others, right? And yet he doesn't do so, doesn't daven, doesn't say prayers, then ma adoli yeshlo. So what advantage does he have? What benefit do we get from him? Now what happens if he does pray and still the prayer has not been answered? So Maitakante, what should he do in order to improve the situation? And in that case he says, Yeleich etzel choser shebador. Let him go to a very pious man, you know, the person who is the most pious in his own generation, v'yarbe lo b'tfilah, and let him pray extensively on his behalf. Shenemar, and again we have a pasuk in Iyov that he's interpreting. It's written by Itzav. Aleho b'mafkia, he literally commanded concerning it with one who is mafkia. Now what is mafkia? So he says, v'yem pingia elitzila. The word mafkia over here, by the way, there it means in the original probably means like the target or something like
spot,
that. Yeah, but this is not how you know. As I've said quite a few times already, there's a difference between pshat and between drash. When it comes to drash, you know, you take the pasuk and you want to teach something from it, so you give a new twist to it. Okay, so here he takes the word pegiyah or mafgiyah And it takes it not in the sense of, you know, of targeting or something like that, but it means someone who davens, someone who knows how to daven. How do we know that the root could imply that? So he says, V'ein pegiyah tefiloi, he says. Pegiyah means prayer. Shenemars, we have a posik in Yirmiyahu which says, V'yatu al tispalil b'ad hom hazeh, V'yal tisa ba'adom minu espilo, V'yal tifgabi. Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, and you do not pray on behalf of this people. The Rabbeinu Shalom says to the Jeremiah that the people of Israel are sunken in sin and therefore don't even pray on their behalf, right? V'yal tisa ba'adom, and do not lift up on their behalf rino espilo, literally, you know, a song and prayer. In other words, you know, don't say prayers for their behalf. V'yal tifgabi, and don't literally bother me. Don't supplicate me, right? But from this we see that pegiyo al tifgabi means, you know, and don't pray to me for them. Okay, so we know then that where should he go? He should go vayitzav aleha b'mafkia. He should go to somebody who is a mafkia, who knows how to pray to the Rabbeinu Shalom. All right, and now what happens again? V'im lochash. Yeah, the yim locha shri yosa biyodai. Now, what happens if a person does pray, okay, the yosa biyodo, and the prayer has been successful? In other words, what he prayed for comes to pass. So, he says, umegiz datu alov, and as a result of that, because he saw that his prayer was successful, so then he becomes haughty. In other words, he thinks that it's a great big a big macher, macher, and so on. So in that case, you know what the result is? The result is, maybe afla elam. He brings, literally, anger into this world. In other words, he arouses the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's anger by suddenly, you know, becoming so swell-headed because he was successful in his prayer that, you know, he thinks that he's the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's right-hand man. You know.
If you don't get an answer, your prayer is bad.
Right.
If you do get an answer, it's bad, too.
Right.
So, well, what is the...
The answer is that you should be able to pray and at the same time still retain humility.
Yeah, humility, of course.
Right. But, you know, if it becomes swell-headed as a result...
Well, so the message is not to be... Not to be... be arrogant.
Right. Now, how do we know that the person who becomes, you know, haughty, becomes swell-headed, he brings anger into the world? Shenemar, we have a pasuk. It's interesting to see how they take psukim out of their literal context, and they give a new drei, so to speak.
Double finger.
Right.
Sounds like a Christian
psukim, but not Torah. Chas v'shalom. How could you say such? First of all...
No, that's what they're doing with our Torah.
Yeah, right.
And that's why they got this JC for
you're right, by the way. I mean, of course, you know, if you read a little bit the New Testament, I've looked into a little bit once in a while.
Rabbi Sunshine is giving a course at JCC on how to...
how to answer missionaries.
These people.
Uh-huh.
And it's very interesting, right?
Yeah.
And that's this why I know this.
I see.
He shows the psukim from this one and that one.
Yeah, right. I mean, they'll take also a pasuk and they'll twist it, you
definitely,
know.
Definitely.
I mean, you know, like, for example, I can quote you this business where Yeshayahu says, you take a look at this woman, this young woman. She's pregnant, she's going to give a birth. Oh, so what are they translated? Behold this virgin. Was going to give birth.
Now,
needless to say, right.
Really
took it out of context, right. The word Alma never means virgin.
No.
It simply means young woman. Like Ella means a youth. So Alma is a young woman, okay? But, you know, to fit their bill of goods, you know, so they mistranslated and thought it, you see.
And another one. It's interesting. Some woman is talking to a friend.
Speak louder.
And he said, I'm getting to my point here. That's, he said that this woman said Elohim, which says that means our gods, in order to show that they're...
That is plural.
Yeah, plural, right.
But of course, it's not true. I mean, they find in it, you know, a justification for the Trinity.
Right.
So they point to Bereshis Bor Elohim, right? So the answer, the Jewish answer is, it shows how much you don't understand, because it doesn't say Bora'u, or something like that, that says Bora'ah, which is singular. Even though it is Elohim, and it looks like a plural, but nevertheless there's only one God, not a God who's subdivided into three.
Then Bora'ah becomes a problem because that stands for Ben, Ruach, and Ava.
No, Melech. That's already, I don't know who's Drash. That sounds
that's
like
a, that's a Christian that's a rabbi
thing. It's a Christian thing. It's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Ben, Ruach,
I never heard that.
I don't want to record that.
And Eob over there says Mikne Af Al Oilam. Very difficult pasuk. What exactly does it mean? But there, the context is about rain coming. Okay. After all, don't forget, the Tanis deals with rain to begin with, right?
Right.
So Mikne in Hebrew means cattle. Okay. Af Al Oilam. So Af is short for Afilu. In other words, even cattle, they react al oila, which is translated in its context over there as meaning, you know, like an approaching storm. In other words, the cattle react, and you could see from their behavior, you know, that a storm is coming, that rain is going to fall. Okay, but what do they do with this pasuk? So the answer is that first of all, we see that they take the word. Okay. Mikna, and what do they make it? They make it makna. Okay? Makna is the verb, which means what? Literally acquires or possesses, acquires, yeah. Af, af, we know, also means anger. Al oila, and oila is in the sense of like haughtiness. So in other words, if you are megas dato, right? If you are haughty because of the fact that you were successful in praying, and then you suddenly think that you're a big knocker and next to the Beinu Shalalem, then in that case, you know what happens? You bring maybe af le'olam. You are makne af le'olam. In other words, you bring anger into the world. The Beinu Shalalem becomes angry because of your behavior. Rav Omar, Rav said, Shnei Talmidei Chachamim Sheyoshim Yirachas. So he takes the same pasuk, Rava, and he interprets it as follows. He says, two Talmidei Chachamim who were dwelling in the same city, but they're not nice to each other in halacha, which means that, you know, instead of discussing halacha gently, doesn't say that, you know, that you can't disagree about halacha. You can disagree about halacha. As we see, I mean, Hillel and Shammai, I mean, they had their disagreements. Abaye and Rava had disagreements and so on, okay? Rav and Shmuel, I mean, I could quote all kinds of people, you know. But the point is, they have to be noichen zelozeh. They have to be gentle, respectful, one to another. They have to have, you know, affection for each other as being, you know, teachers of the Torah and so on, so that even if you have conflicting points of view, but nevertheless, you recognize that the other one also has a great deal of basis, and you know that both of you are striving for the same thing in order to teach the right way in order to serve God. Okay? So, if you have two Talmidei Chachamim, they could be great Talmidei Chachamim. Doesn't say great, but I'll throw it in. Totally good measure. And they live in the same town, and yet there's always rivalry among them. There's backstabbing among them. Unfortunately, it happens sometimes.
Even now.
Right. So, in that particular case, then they arouse the anger of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and they bring it to pass. Shenema mikne af aleinu. Okay. Omar Reish Lakish. Now he goes back to another pasuk that we had, that we spoke about before. It says, "My dichsev." What is the meaning of "im yishay hanochash b'le lochash"? You know, if the serpent bites without paying any attention to the charm, you know, that is being pronounced over him, the end of Yisrael nevala loshen, and there is no advantage to the person, literally the one who utters the charm. So, well, you know, what advantage is there? So they, he comes, so Reish Lakish comes in with a very beautiful interpretation. He says, La'osid Lobe, the time will come in the future that Miskapsois, the voice, Kolachayos, Eitzel HaNochash, that all the various animals will gather together and they will come to the serpent, or they'll gather around the serpent, the Yomim Lo, and they'll say to him as follows. They say, Ari Dores V'Yochel. A lion, he'll trample, you know, his prey, and he eats. In other words, why does the lion behave that way? He's hungry, so that's why he attacks his prey and he eats. But it's there for a purpose. Ze'ev toref v'yochel. The wolf also, he tears his, you know, his prey, and he eats. Ator ma'anona yesh l'tor. But you, tell me, what advantage do you have? I mean, what do you get out of the fact that, you know, you're using your tongue and biting? So Omar Lahem, so he said to him, the Ein Yisrum Leval Haloshim, that, you know, that there is no advantage to the person with the tongue. But the idea is that the Nachash over here is really being used as a symbol of Lashon Hara. So in other words, everybody is saying to him, look, when they attack prey, we know why. They're hungry, they have to eat. Okay. But you, when you use your tongue in order to bite people, which is, as I said, a synonym for Lashon Hara, right? What advantage are you getting out of the fact that you're doing it? What benefit do you have from being a slanderer, destroying people's reputation? What are you getting out of it? Omar Rabbi Yami. Rabbi Yami said, "Ein filosoi shel odem nishmas elim kein meisim nafshe bechavo." He says that a person's prayer will not be heard unless he actually lifts up his soul in his hands. Now, what does it mean, lift up his soul in his hands? So we have to understand. One of the external signs of praying is that you raise your hands to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam in prayer. But what Rabbi Ami is saying is, it isn't enough to raise your hands, not just make a gesture. You know, with that gesture has to go the nefesh, the soul, that has to go together with it. This is the way prayer will be answered. But if it's only mechanical performance and not, you know, something coming from the heart, then such prayer will not be answered. Shenema, the pasuk for that is Niso levodeinu el kapayim. Let us lift up our hearts to our hands. In other words, not just our hands, but let's put our very hearts, our hearts and souls, into our hands when we pray into the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Okim Shmuel Amora Alei. Question as to whether we say it in the parentheses. I adopt the view that we have the Rasho that it's in the parentheses, which means that we omit it. Okay. So Ukim Shmuel Amora Alei. Shmuel appointed an Amora. In this case, Amora here doesn't mean the sense in which we sometimes use it, namely a teacher of the Talmud, but Amora is like what we've spoken before about the